So we can open with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Can you guys hear me okay? Am I too loud? Am I too quiet? Okay. So my name's Tara. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 13th of 2024. And I, thank you. And I came into the rooms at 25. I'm 27 now. I'm going to let the rest of the panel introduce themselves, and then I thought we could go around and also introduce ourselves, if you guys want to say your sobriety date or just your name and what age you got into the rooms. If you guys could just come up here. When it's
All right. Hello, guys. My name is Bree. I'm an alcoholic. Hello. So I first came into the rooms when I was 24. And my first clean date was June of last year, so June 2025. And I'm 25 now, actually. So it's been, about a year and some change. Well, a year. But thank you, guys. It's good to see you guys.
My name's Sean. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 20th, 1995. I was 25 years old when I got here the second time. I did get here at 21 in 1991, but didn't get it till 4 years later.
I'm Rose. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 21st of 2021. I came in when I was 25, and now I'm 30.
All right, perfect timing. We got our last panel member coming up right now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm catching my breath. I ran. My sobriety date is March 1st, 2024. Thank you. This Sunday, I will be getting 2 years. I'm 33, so I was 31? Yeah, I was 31 when I came into the program. Thank you.
Was that it? Yeah, perfect. You can sit here. Okay. All right, so we're going to each share a little bit about topics relating to AA, being young in AA. And then if you guys have any questions and you want to ask them towards the end, we can do that. I also have some papers. I could run them down if you don't want to ask it out loud and you just want me to bring it up here and read it as a question. Oh, before I do that, actually, let's go around the room and say our sobriety date or just our name and what age we were when we got in the rooms so we can see how many young people there are.
Thanks, Becky.
Maybe with some of these topics we can relate. The first topic I wanted to call up is similarities and differences in the rooms. Of course. Is this you? Okay.
Again, I'm Rose, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rose.
From some of you guys that know, I've shared this topic plenty of times when I first came in the rooms. One being starters that you guys were a lot older than me. Age and sobriety, obviously. I felt like I didn't have anything in common, and a lot of you guys felt more like grandma and grandpas to me. The way how you guys like clung on to me, because at the time there was only two of us that were young. You guys don't even know that. It was just me and Araceli, and they clung on to us. Yeah, there's a lot of differences in here, obviously, but one of the best things, though, it's similarities. Like, or let me go back to the differences. The differences is I've been in a lot of rooms, and there's a group of people, I think, I don't know how many people, but they got sober in 2014, and I was graduating high school in 2014, and I was like, I have nothing in common with you guys. I was just starting my life, and you guys were just either graduating rehab or you know, like, I'm going to get sober. There's not really much differences, but similarities, there's a lot. I've noticed, for starters, everybody in this room is sober. Doesn't matter how many years, how many days, everybody is just, you know, working one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, 1 second at a time, trying to stay sober. Everybody usually has somewhat of the same problem, kind of. Well, I guess another difference is majority of y'all are married. I'm single with no kids, so I don't have those problems. You know, or the best thing, too, is, like, hearing where you guys came from. Like, there's two people in here who, I don't know if I was jealous or whatever you want to call it, but they always love to make it known. They worked for NASA. You know, they partied and stuff while they were working for NASA, and I'm like, good for you, you know? I'm not that smart, but seeing, like, where you guys came from, whether it be teachers, construction, your own, like, things, lawyers, and it's just, like, everybody has a different background, but again, everybody has one goal, and that is to stay sober. This is kind of new. This is kind of, like, overwhelming for me because I haven't been to a roundup since I was, like, 6 or 7 months, and when I walked in the door, there was somebody, well, multiple people, they all bombarded me before I could even get my name tag, and I was like, oh, I need to breathe. Calm down, guys, come on. Like, let me breathe. And how I felt was how I felt in the rooms with you guys that, like, clung on to me, told me to get a big book, told me to get a sponsor, told me to do this, told me to do that. And I remember also, too, everybody has the same similarities. None of us, when we came in, we either lied, saying that I want this, and a lot of us that are sitting down now with a lot of time, you're thinking, like, you're so full of shit. Like, you don't want this. You're going to say this to think that that's what we want to hear, but we want to hear the nitty-gritty. Why'd you come in? What got you in here? And it's cool because I hear it in meetings all the time. My favorite one is somebody got, like, 4 DUIs or some shit, and all you guys are just laughing, like, yeah, I got, like, 6. I got 8. But you see that in the real world, they're like, what is wrong with you? Get your life together. But it's just like, this is like a bad topic. Thank you. Yeah, there's really not, other than like, there's really not a lot of difference, but there's a lot of similarities. And the biggest thing is just like, everybody just shows love. It doesn't matter where you started, how many times you went back out, how many times you came back in. And it's cool, though, because I got this mentality. I got it from one of the old-timers. They were like, I want to know why you went back out. What made you think it was going to be different? Like, what stopped? And you hear the same thing. I didn't work the steps. I dropped my sponsor. I thought I could do it myself. And I had that mentality. The only difference is I didn't relapse. Yeah, I don't really have much to say. I can't really think. Like I said, it's very overwhelming. So I'm going to pass it along to somebody else.
Thank you. Are you ready? All right. The next topic is going to be having yets in the program. So that had to be explained to me. But when I first came in, I also had trouble with the similarities and the differences and wasn't sure what my bottom was. And somebody who is now is still a very important part of my recovery, a woman shared with me, well, you just have a lot of yets out there. And I thought, that's true, because I used to drink and drive, but I never got a DUI. You know, I did get pulled over once, and they let me go. So that's just a reminder, you know, when you talk to other people in recovery, you get to change your perspective. So I'm going to call up Bree to share a little bit more on that.
Hi. Hello, guys. I'm Bree. I'm an alcoholic. This might be a little short because I did have a little anxiety and I was volunteered, but that's cool. That's okay, right? So to me, having yets means making excuses. You know, I haven't gotten in trouble yet, so I'm going to keep drinking. You know, I don't have health issues yet, so I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. My boss hasn't said anything yet. You know, it's just keep making excuses for the problems that we have. But when you come into the 12-step program, you can't make excuses. You have to come out of yourself. You have to be real with yourself and real with your fellows as well. And I don't know. I feel like making excuses as a young person is because I have all this time in the world, right? You feel like you're just, whatever, right? But in reality, you're just hurting yourself and harming yourself more than anything, because you should have been real with drinking and driving. I should have put, you know, kept that tab closed or not even opened it while I was driving. Oh, I'm scared. sorry. You're right.
There you go. That's good.
And honestly, I used to make excuses myself as a young person. I used to think that an alcoholic was just somebody with hard liquor, you know. I didn't think beer counted at all. So the Four Locos I used to buy every day, I was like, psh, I don't have a problem. Girl, you serious? You know? And I'm happy today that I no longer make those excuses. And I hope that I can reach out to another young person or even an older person, anybody who's struggling with this addiction. I would love to just help them to stop, slow down, and stop making excuses, because you're only hurting yourself more than you could have. And a little bit about my story, real quick. I was dating an alcoholic, even I was alcoholic myself, but they were having stomach pains and stomach issues. And I didn't put two and two together. I just thought, you know, whatever, take your medicine. And I asked her one day, I was like, did they give you medicine? Did they prescribe medicine? She said, there's no medicine. And I looked at her, and I was like, what are you talking about? And she said, I'm in, like, really bad stage of kidney liver failure. And, you know, that hurt me, you know, I'm not going to lie. But there's only so much excuses you can keep making. And that she still made excuses to drink, even though she was in organ failure. And, you know, when you hit rock bottom and you realize and you wake up, either you come to a meeting, you're dragged to a meeting, and you hit rock bottom and you wake up and you realize that you can't make any more excuses, you have no more yets. It's real eye-opening and it's awakening. And I appreciate my group and all the other groups, Sunrise, for helping me come out of myself and not having any more yets. Even though there's yets to come, I don't want to make any more excuses. So thank you, guys.
Okay, so before I call up the next speaker, I guess I'll share on my topic because Bree inspired me. And just so you guys know, these two people, oh, and Rose, I just pulled her out of the crowd as soon as she walked in. So, you know, there was, that's being of service. So my topic was going to be something that I really didn't want to share about, but it's a barrier to my recovery and to being able to feel like I fit in the rooms, and that is my ego. For me, I have always spent a lot of time with people that are much older than me. So being in recovery in Yuma is not my first time hanging out with, you know, a more mature crowd. And once I got sober and my brain cleared, I was very quick to recognize, okay, I'm still a very intelligent person. I have a lot of creativity. I'm very capable of a lot, you know, high functioning, despite, you know, human problems. So for me, it was kind of hard and still is to, be around older, mature people and have them, you know, impart wisdom and give me advice as if I don't already know, you know? And that's embarrassing to admit because all of us, you know, came here for help because we couldn't do it ourselves. And so even though I don't crave alcohol anymore, my main problem isn't drinking, it's still up here. It's my brain. It's how I can put up barriers between me and, you know, the next person. Instead of being able to learn from, you know, I'll just say my peers. I feel like we're all peers here, regardless of how much time we have, how long we've been on this earth, you know, no matter what we've been through, right? We're all equals. So I have to tell myself that when I feel like it's kind of like you spot it, you got it, right? I see other people have ego and my ego flares up. So that's a barrier to my recovery for sure. And I just have to let that go. I'm going to call up the next person. I hope that made sense. What did you have?
High bottom, low bottom.
High bottom, low bottom. We've got two people sharing on this.
Oh, there's two sharing? Great.
I was just told, so. Let's see.
Hello again, my name's Sean, I'm an alcoholic, and I have to confess I did not tell my age when I first introduced myself, and I'm still not going to, no. No, so I'm actually 55 years old, and I was 25 years old when I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous. As far as high bottoms, low bottoms, you know, in my opinion, and my never-to-be-humble opinion at 55, a bottom is a bottom. Whatever it takes to get you here, that's your bottom. And whether you were coming in here living the luxury of life or you came in here from underneath the bridge, you got here some way, somehow, and it had nothing to do with anything except for higher power getting you here. And that's just me, that's just my opinion, and I'm going to stick with it. But what I do want to talk about is one of the quality problems of getting here so young, in particular in Yuma, because we are because of the snowbird and fluctuation that we get in the wintertime, having over 30 years and still being the youngest person in the room. To me, that's funny. It may not be to some of you guys, but it's hilarious up here in the head. So anyways, Carl, I know you're going to get me back on that one. Anyways, some of the things, and God bless everyone, because some of the things that have gone through my head when I turned 40 and I started hearing people introducing themselves as newcomers at the age of 40, and I would sit there and go, oh my God, they got to drink till 40? You know, those were some of the thoughts I started having as someone who was, you know, got here young. I didn't have those thoughts at 25, and I'll tell you what, I certainly didn't know how to work a consistent program in recovery through my 20s and my 30s. I had a great start, and when I got to step 10, well, you know, I got here young. I really don't have any faults or defects of character. But guess what? I got to experience all those defects of character in sobriety. So while, you know, I could have been out there drinking, experience them, and get here at 40 or 50 or 60 or whatever, or I could just experience them sober and have to look at my crap sober. And there's no hiding, and there's no outlet, there's no relief from it, there's no picking up the drink, because I was taught you just don't drink no matter what, and that's what I've done consistently day for day for all these years, is I don't drink no matter what, and I just get through it. However, I don't need to beat myself up through my defects of character. So learning, as some things you don't get until you get wisdom with years and age, and that's how to take care of yourself, how to not beat up yourself inside emotionally. We do these at young ages. We are sober and we're just happy. Like, I was just so happy that I wasn't drinking and doing outside issues. And the biggest goal for me was just to get through the day and go to sleep sober. And, you know, whatever wreckage I created that day, I just tucked it away like it never happened. But I got to tell you, I need this program more today than I ever did when I first got here, because today I do know how to work a step 10 properly. Matter of fact, I had to do one today. I had a blow up yesterday, and I had to do a TEPS 10, which means step 10 actually means I got to do step 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9. And so, you know, I had to inventory everything. I had to look at my part again in a loving way and not beat myself up. And what it comes down to is I didn't treat another human being with the respect that I would like to be treated with. And isn't that most of my defects of character anyway in the first place? Is I'm not treating other people the way I would like to be treated because of the big ego up here between the two ears, right? So once again, but the other person was in the program, and when we made our amends, it was a fist bump because we both did the work, and we both did our inventories that day, and we didn't have to do a long, drawn-out apology. We just smiled and hugged it out. And what a beautiful thing that is in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Can I get an amen? Amen. Amen. Let me tell you, I love this program. It's the best deal in town for alcoholics like us. Put your $2 in the basket, and it's going to be the best entertainment you ever get. Thank you.
Oh, okay. I'm going to call up the next person, Monica, who's going to speak on high bottom, low bottom.
All right. Hey, y'all. My name's Monica, and I'm an alcoholic. I had no idea I was actually speaking in a microphone until I just got up here on this table, so I was voluntold, so I don't really know what I'm saying yet, other than high bottom and low bottom. I was going to piggyback off Sean, but he basically said everything, so that's all. just kidding. Okay. I was also young. I had to, like, do mental math, and just a nod to Sean, I don't know a lot of people that came in that I have met in the program that came in their mid-20s and have 30 years of sobriety, and thank you. That was very inspiring for me. So when I came in the rooms, I would consider myself having a low bottom. I had a lot of yets left in my life for this recovery if I were to go back out. So it was really hard for me to come into these rooms thinking that I needed to be in the rooms. I guess basically, a mini story. My daughter's dad, I had my daughter when I was 18, and he was one of us, and he died when he was 23, and that's when I was like, well, I think I wanted to rationalize, like, I don't know. I didn't really participate in alcohol prior to his, like, I did, but I didn't, and then when he passed, I was like, I wasn't even with him, so it was a lot of anger, resentment, all that, so I was going to participate in the things that he did, I guess, of a way to get back at him. I don't know. Obviously, it did not work for me, but that was in 2014 when he passed, and I got sober in 2019. So basically, that whole period of 2014 to 2019, I was pretty miserable without realizing I was miserable. Like, I lived with my mom and dad. I had a great relationship with my parents. For the most part, I had great relationships with my friends. I was a 911 dispatcher, you know, like all these things. But the other thing that I try to like think, I got a DUI in 2014 of August. And in my mind, I was like, everybody gets DUIs. That doesn't mean I'm an alcoholic. and then I was humbly told, like, in my first year of sobriety, there was a gentleman that gave the statistics of DUIs, and it was really small, and I was like, oh my gosh, that was very embarrassing that I thought that way. But anyways, yeah, so basically where I was at in my life in 2019 is I was drinking and using outside issues on my job. I was not honest with my parents. Like, I didn't want to do any adulting, any responsibility, not being a parent. I would ask my mom and dad if they could watch my daughter so I could go hang out with friends, and then I would be gone for 4 days and then come back home. You know that story in the book with the tornado? Ain't it, Grandma? The wind stopped blowing, but it's a wreck. Like, that was me. I was a tornado in the disaster and all that. And so what brought me in is my daughter, she told me she was afraid that I was going to be in heaven with her dad, and she was scared that I was going to die, and she was 8 years old. And so we kind of just had this moment of just like crying in bed together, and I encouraged her of how brave she was for being able to express her feelings to me, and how proud of I was of her, et cetera, like all that stuff. And then immediately when she fell asleep, I went upstairs and told my mom and dad. I woke them up at like 2 o'clock in the morning and was like, hey, I just want to let you guys know that I have a drug and alcohol problem. And because I knew if I didn't do it, nothing was going to happen. And it was immediately when I woke up at 8 a.m. and I'm like, why did I tell my mom and dad that? Because they were like, you... Obviously, like, now they're up. I worked night shift, so how it worked, I was able to get away with it for as long as I did because of my schedule, so it was passing. Like, they obviously knew there was stuff going on with my behavior, but my mom, like, to this day, she was like, I had no idea that you were, doing drugs, basically. They knew I had a drinking problem, but... So it was just one of those things, and then I had to tell them, okay, well, I'm going to go to a meeting today. I already found a meeting at noon, and I wasn't even going to go, but my mom, of course, like 30 minutes till, hey, let me know when you get to that meeting. And so, anyways, yeah, I go in the room. So in the beginning of it, it really was just me trying to appease, like, my family and get them off my back, and then with time, like, it took me about... 30 days before I got a sponsor, and then I got a sponsor, and I basically was just, I did all the suggestions she told me, but man, I was really stubborn about it, and God bless her, but she, and then that's when my heart started to change, and I was like, I need to be in here. Like, I stopped trying to look at differences, and because that was, I didn't have anything big happen, so a lot of the I tend to be in noon meetings. I love old timers. I like what they have to share, but then I want to complain about only being with old timers. But a lot of the stories that I got to learn in my first year of sobriety, well, in that first 30 days, I wanted to not compare. Like, gutter drunks is basically what they call themselves, where they're under the bridge or they just, like, destroyed everything, had no relationships with any of their family members. I'm like, how can I think I'm an alcoholic when I live with my mom and dad and no one kicked me out and things like that? And, once it was put the, I don't know what the term, the saying is, like, put the cotton in your mouth or take them out of your ears or whatever, I don't know. Basically, I just sat down and shut up and listened to my sponsor and stopped trying to, like, compare myself of being the 27-year-old in the room. And that was a really big thing, too, is I loved being in that noon group, but then I wanted to complain to my sponsor. I was like, there's nobody my age. And she was like, yeah, because no one gets sober in their 20s. Like, they're out still experiencing. Or she'd be like, going to Nashville. Like, if you want to be around younger crowd, get up in the city. And I didn't want to do it. So it's just, yeah, that's the type of drunk I am. So I want to complain but not listen to the suggestions given. So I guess the low bottom is when I came in and just, like, hearing the stories that people had, which were super inspiring, I wanted to also, like, contradict of, that's not what it looked like for me. I didn't do that, so I don't have a problem with drugs and alcohol. Or just say, I just have a problem with drugs but not drinking. But really, it goes, I have a problem with anything. So I'm really grateful for everybody in here, and I learn a lot from all of you guys, the people with 24 hours or just, like, constantly picking up the 24-hour chips, and then the people that pick up 60 years. Like, I learn a lot from you guys, and I'm really grateful that y'all stuck with me. What is it, like, AA learned, or you don't have, or what do we say? When we pick up a 24-hour chip, it's not you committing, it's us committing to you. And the people in my home group where I got sober in Tennessee, man, like, I would not be here without them. They really loved me before I learned to love myself. And I'm just really grateful that they didn't give up on me. I'm going to get so emotional. I'm just really happy to be here and be sober. I moved across country with my daughter, and if you would have asked me that 7 years ago, like, my parents, I wasn't allowed to be alone with my daughter. And so to be here standing, a sober person, like, trying to make it, learning how to budget, who would have thought this budget, like, seriously, and my daughter having a relationship with me, and she gets to go to bed at night not worried about if I'm going to die, and I'm sober and I'm going to be there. When I tell her I'm going to pick her up, she knows I'm going to pick her up, and she used to not have that. And for an 8-year-old to tell me that she thinks I'm going to die, and then today be like, I'm so grateful that you're my mom. Like, we hardly fight at all, and I'm really, I mean, knock on wood, she's a freshman, but, you know, for the most part, I'm really grateful. How long do I need to talk? What? I don't know.
For, like, 20 minutes more.
Okay? 20 minutes more, Sarah? This is not a speaker meeting. Okay. Anyways, okay, that's all. Oh, I was going to say, my first grand sponsor used to always say that she's a one-chip wonder. You relapse does not have to be a part of your recovery, and I just want to say that because I stuck with it, and honestly, the pride, I'm like, I want to be a one-chip wonder too and be like Miss Eva, and so I just want to say that is relapse does not have to be a part of your recovery. I know it's a part of a lot of people's, and I'm grateful y'all made it back in the rooms for that, but for the people that are here in early recovery and have yet to go back out, you don't have to go back out. Thanks.
Thanks, Monica. I'm going to call up Sarah to share a little bit.
All right. It is nervous speaking in front of people.
So I didn't have a topic, so my topic's just going to be experience, strength, and hope. And I'm just going to talk about how I got into the rooms and I guess a little bit about my bottom and similarities, differences, all the little bit of everything. So I... I'm Sarah and I'm an alcoholic. did I not say that? No. Anyway, so I came into the rooms and my rock bottom was my rock bottom. It was big. It was a big bottom. I tried to end my life and I am a crier. So I'm sorry. But I'll use my shirt. I tried to end my life. The last 2 years of my drinking was bad, but I didn't think I had a problem because I didn't get a DUI. I didn't get into trouble. I'm a really good student, a good worker. I've always been that perfectionist. I gotta, you know, meet people's standards of how they see me and how I'm like and this and that. And I've always had an image and a rep to protect. So for me drinking, when I would drink, for me it was an escape. I didn't have to think when I drank. I didn't have to worry about how I looked. I didn't have to worry about any of that stuff. So drinking for me was awesome. Solution, I feel, is a weird word because I felt like I didn't have to be uptight Sarah anymore, and I could be fun Sarah. And people love fun Sarah because she's not uptight and she's not worrying about the consequences and she's not worrying about the rules. And so I started to depend more and more on it because I loved how it made me feel. And I'm like, well, I work hard. I deserve to drink. I'm also going to school. I deserve this. I thought I deserved everything. And so I just started to drink, and then I had taken benzos before, but then I discovered what it's like to take that with alcohol, and that was a game changer. And so I just was, now I couldn't just drink. I had to take the pills with a drink, and it just started becoming a habit. Like, oh, I'm about to go out. Let's see, I'm going to go out at 10. I'm going to start drinking at 6. I'll take the pill at 9. You know, and I had a whole strategy of how I can make it through the night without really fucking up so I can make it home. And I didn't realize I was doing that until I came into the program. Because normal people don't think what time to drink and take this and all that. So I didn't think it was an issue. And finally, after Thanksgiving weekend, I had a really big binge. Thanksgiving weekend, friends from out of town come in to Yuma. We all hang out. We all go to Red's downtown. And, or Jimmy D's. Yeah, sorry, Jimmy D's. Anyway, so I started drinking a lot more, I guess. I don't know. It started catching up with me. And every time I talked on the phone with my mom, she would say, "You sound different. You sound like you're slurring. You don't," and I'm like, "Mom, it's 3 p.m. I'm just getting off of work. Like, I'm not drinking." But because the night before of how much was in my system, I guess I was still slurring. I was, you know? So
So then that became an issue, and I started to distance myself away from my parents because they kept telling me about my drinking, and I would fight them. I'd say, no, you guys, like, I'm 30 years old. I live on my own. Like, you guys don't help me with anything, so I can do what I want. And that was, again, another sense of control for me because I was like, I can't control anything else, but I can control this. But I wasn't controlling it. So in December, I flipped my car, and I think that should have been my rock bottom, but it wasn't. My dad was very upset with me. You know, I hadn't seen him this upset in a while. And his birthday was coming up because his birthday is January 8th. And this happened during Christmas break because I work for the school. And so I was off for 2 weeks and that, no, 3 weeks. And that winter break, I don't remember it. I drank so much because I was on break. And so that's when I flipped my car. And that wasn't my rock bottom until, I don't know, then my dad was like, hey, for my birthday, if you're going to drink, then don't bother coming. So I said, okay, I'm not going to drink. I drank the night before, but I was like, okay, I'm not going to go. And I showed up, and I was good. I had my Coke, you know, I'm soda. I'm like good and everything. And then my uncle was like, you know that's bad for you. It's healthier to drink beer. And I'm like, you know what? I agree. So then he got up and so I was like, you know what? What's one? My dad's not going to get mad. One's not going to do much. And it didn't. But then once I got home, my partying began. So I would try to hide it by bringing Starbucks drinks. And it's like, no, I'm drinking Starbucks. But it was spiked. And everything. I was so into the little shooters. I think I felt cool buying the little shooters and putting them in the Starbucks cup. And I'm like, nobody knows that I have this. And I'm at the store or at the movie theater. I took a bottle, a container full of vodka, and I asked for water at Harkins. And I was just, you know, that's insane to me now. But it wasn't at that time. It was a fun time. Anyway, but finally around February, it started catching up, and I felt, the only way I could describe it, I felt like death. I felt like my body was dead, and I don't know how it was functioning. I don't know how my body was still doing what it was supposed to do, because waking up felt heavier. It almost felt like, I don't think I can get up from today. You know, I need to, and I wouldn't. I wouldn't get up. I'd miss a lot of work. But because my schedule was flexible in a way, I was always able to lie and hide about it. So finally, I ran out the 2 weeks before my bottom. The week of my bottom. I had already been running out of clonazepam, and I had told, and I regretted it, but I had told my friend who was supplying me with it, I had said, hey, I think I'm having an issue, so I'm just going to stick to drinking, and I'm not going to do the benzos. I said, I think that's what's messing me up. It has to be. So then she's like, okay, I'm not giving you any more. I totally regretted that because I realized how dependent I was on them, and I was, like, looking for them. So I had asked my friend for... what is it? It's like a common name. Xanax? Yes. I had asked her for Xanax and told her I had ran out. And she's like, okay. She's like, I have like a bottle left or whatever, but I'll give you like a few. I think she gave me like 10. And I took all 10 that night. And I didn't feel anything. I felt like I was still there, but I was like, no, I don't think this did anything for me. So then I went and got a bottle of escitalopram depression pills that I had because I was supposed to be treating that. and I said, you know what? I have a bottle of whiskey, and I have a full bottle of pills. I think this is it for me, you know? The day before, I felt like I had said my goodbyes because it was a really good day. And I hadn't had a really good day at that time for a while. So Wednesday, I remember I went into work. I got everyone breakfast, Jack's. And, you know, I did, like, because I was like, and they were like, oh, my God, Sarah's the best and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, you know. And that was, for me, like, my goodbye, you know. I had wrote a note and said, you know, that was it. So I took a bottle of whiskey because at that time I was really into whiskey because I was watching Yellowstone. So it was like I wanted to be Beth, if you guys know. Yeah. And so I took a pill and then a shot of whiskey. I took a pill and then a shot of whiskey until I finished the bottle. And then I must have passed out because I woke up, I think, around 4 a.m. and my stomach hurt like a pain I had never felt before. And that scared me because, well, I was planning on not waking up. And so I called my friend and I told her what I had done, the one who gave me the Xanax. And she's like, oh, she got upset. She didn't know I had a problem. She thought I was going to use it for good. But anyway, and then I ended up calling 911 on myself. And I remember joking with the doctor how I wanted to kill myself. You know, I was kind of like, yeah, you know, I just wanted to end it. And the look that she gave me was like, really? You think this is funny? And it wasn't until I came into these rooms that, you know, you guys found that funny. She didn't. So they titled me, and I got sent to, like, a psych detox unit up in Avondale. And for me, that was rock bottom. For me, trying to end my life, I think that's as bottom as it gets, when you just don't want to live anymore. And I thought that would be easier for everyone. I told my parents, I said, guys, you wouldn't have to worry about me, though. Like, Mom, I'd rather have you cry at my grave than worry about what I'm doing and stressing out. That's how I thought. I thought it was easier. And they were just so hurt. I had never heard my dad cry like that. So for me, hurting the people that I love the most, because I am blessed with really good parents, I thought that's so selfish of me. It's selfish of me to want to take my life, but not thinking how it would affect them, you know? That's selfish. So anyway, it was really scary to be in that center. It was like prison for 5 days. I had paper scrubs, and I couldn't read. They didn't trust us with pens. They didn't trust us with anything. So I came into the rooms on a Monday. I went to the women's meeting, and that was the meeting I needed to be at for my first day. It was. I was originally going to go to that meeting the Monday before everything happened, because I had talked to a guy I dated who is in the program. This was like 2020, and he was in the program. And it's weird because when I was dating him, I was like, you know what? I think I'm willing to give up alcohol for him and this and that. And yeah, so anyway, so I said, hey, I think I need to go to a meeting. Would you know of any? And he said, yes, the women's meeting is really good. I think you should go. He was supposed to take me on a Monday. He ended up canceling on me last minute. And because I remember I was so nervous. And he canceled, and I got upset because I was like, well, I don't know then how I'm going to go, because I don't think I can make it on my own. And I was already thinking, I was like, well, I guess I could go get a coffee, spike it, and go to the meeting, and that will get me through that meeting. But I didn't end up going. So then I came in that following week, and I think God's timing is perfect. And I was supposed to be there. It was a room. I remember the room so full of like 20 women, and it almost seemed like they were waiting for me. I cried a lot For me, it was sad. I wanted to be the girl that, no, I didn't want to be that. But I thought, if I'm going to be an alcoholic, why couldn't I become an alcoholic at 50, right? Like, why didn't I retire and then was like, oh, I have a drinking problem. Like, why at this age when I feel like I still have so much to do? Because for me, to do meant drinking at the places I went to. It meant drinking on a cruise. It meant drinking in Hawaii. It meant drinking, you know? That was like, I still have so much to do. My life is over. And I mourned. I did. I cried a lot, besides being an emotional person. But I did. I mourned my old life. And that first year was hard. But this second year, you know, I don't have the craving to drink. I had it maybe 6 months ago still where I was like, maybe, like, oh, it'd be nice if I could go to the bar. But now, since then, I don't. It's so crazy. I'm like, I don't crave it. I'm even like, no. There's no issue that's going on in my life that my mind goes to pick up a drink. I'm still dealing with other stuff in my life, and I'm still with my character defects. That's an everyday thing, right? We're always working on ourselves. But the desire to drink is not there anymore. And I am so grateful. And it's because of this program that has taught me a way of living, a design for living, that I don't have to drink to have fun. And I went on my first trip, like, to Boston in November, and I had the time of my life. I did. And not once did I think about going into a bar to drink. Drinking never crossed my mind where it's like, oh, I wish we were in Boston drinking. I even went to a Boston Celtics game. And it was so much fun without the drinking. So I realized that I could still have a really good life and not be drinking. And it's because of you guys. And I'm just, I love old timers, so I love you guys. And thank you.
This is Young AA. Thank you, Sarah.
My name's Tara. I'm an alcoholic. And we're almost done here. I want to say thank you to you guys for coming up and being honest and saving my butt because I was not going to talk this whole hour. And thank you, Bree, so much for coming up. I appreciate that. I really do hope that you guys heard something that you can either relate to or maybe pass on to someone who, you know, struggles with not relating in the rooms, with ego deflation, with all of the things that we talked about here today. So thank you for showing up. Thank you for sticking around. And I thought we could close with the we version of the Serenity Prayer, because I really like that. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.